Okay, so tonight we come to the book of Daniel, and just by way of a little bit of introduction insofar as the purpose of Daniel, what God is using him for, Daniel is the prophet of Gentile times, and Gentile times simply means that dominion has been given to the Gentiles for a certain period of time. And that time, actually, you'll hear this number a lot, or this date a lot in prophecy, 606 BC. That is when Gentile times began under Nebuchadnezzar. And we'll see more of that as we go on in our lesson even tonight. And Gentile times is very quickly drawing to a close, but it has been going on since Nebuchadnezzar. Now, there are a couple of prophets that are prominent at the time that Nebuchadnezzar took over, or he became that first world leader. One of those prophets is Jeremiah. And Jeremiah was there at Jerusalem, and he stayed. Anyway, Jeremiah stayed in Jerusalem. When Nebuchadnezzar came down to carry Judah away captive, then the captain gave Jeremiah his choice. He says, you can go back to Babylon with us and I will make it very comfortable for you, or you can stay here with this residue. They were just old people and others that couldn't make the trip. So Jeremiah stayed behind in Jerusalem with those that were left there on purpose. You'll find that in Jeremiah 4:4. Daniel, on the other hand, was a young man carried away into captivity to Babylon. Here is another. We mentioned it before just a little bit. Israel, and we're talking about the 10 tribes here, Israel were taken captive, rather, about 740 B.C. by Assyria. And that's the way you can remember the captivities, that Israel was taken captive by Assyria. Judah was taken captive by Babylon. And that would be by Nebuchadnezzar once again in 606 B.C. Judah was taken back to Babylon in three separate deportations. The first deportation is in 2 Kings 24:1. And that was when Jehoiakim, and that's K-I-M, Jehoiakim was the king of the Jews. When Nebuchadnezzar first came down and carried them away captive. The second deportation is in 2 Kings 24, verses 11 and 12, and that happened when Jehoiakim, and you spell that C-H-I-N on the end, Jehoiakim. We always were amused and just enjoyed Sister Giesler. She was a German lady, and she had a hard time pronouncing some of these words. And she made it very clear to point out the difference between Jehoiakim and Jehoiachin. And that's the way she pronounced it. She put the real heavy H in there. Because of that German Jew accent. So we learned it Jehoiachin. And so he was the king when the second deportation went to Babylon. And then the third deportation, which really didn't amount to much, that's in 2 Kings 25:1, and that's when a man by the name of Zedekiah ruled. He was really just a governor rather than a king. He was appointed by Nebuchadnezzar, and he also rebelled against Nebuchadnezzar, and his eyes were put out, and he was taken captive at that time. So this marked the final deportation of the Jews back to Babylon. There are two main divisions of Daniel. Chapters 1 to 6 show the Gentile world powers. It shows their failure and the judgment which will befall them and has already. Division 2 is chapters 7 to 12. And this especially relates to the experience of the Jew. It tells us of God's purpose and God's promise for the Jewish nation. And so let's begin here in Daniel in verse 1. This is in the third year of Jehoiakim. That would have meant that this is in the we're talking about here about the first deportation of the Jews back to Babylon. So in Daniel 1:1, in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, unto Jerusalem and besieged it. You can compare this with 2 Kings 24:1. And also Jeremiah 25:1. And there you will find, there in Jeremiah, you will find that the fourth year of Jehoiakim's reign was the first year of Nebuchadnezzar's reign. And so that's why we established this date. God established Nebuchadnezzar as the first world empire leader in 606 BC. He did a lot of other escapades, so to speak, and he besieged, and he took everyone captive, and Judah was among them at that time. In verse 2 here in Daniel, we read, and the Lord. And you can underline it as being the Lord, because that's exactly what it was. God promised them that if you continue to rebel and to disobey me, if you continue to reject the words of the prophets the way you've done, even though I've warned you time and time again, you are going into captivity. And so the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. And as the latter part of this verse says, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar. And we'll see that here in just a moment. But the Lord gave, in the first part here, the Lord gave the king of Judah into his hand. You can put down another reference here of Jeremiah 40. Verses 2 and 3, and it says this, and the captain of the guard took Jeremiah. You see, Jeremiah was living in Jerusalem at this time, and he was really quite an elderly man at this time. And he is one of those prophets that was prophesying, and the people wouldn't pay any attention to him. That God was faithful to send his prophets, but the people just wouldn't listen to them, and Jeremiah was among those prophets. So the captain of the guard took Jeremiah and said unto him, the Lord thy God hath pronounced this evil upon this place. Now I want to notice that it's the captain of the guard that is telling Jeremiah that. We wouldn't be surprised if it were Jeremiah telling that to someone else, and it would still have been the same truth, but it's the captain of the guard that is telling Jeremiah that the Lord has given pronounced evil upon this place. Now the Lord has brought it and done according to this as he has said, because you have sinned against the Lord and have not obeyed his voice, therefore this thing is come upon you. That message came through the captain of the guard. I'm quite sure that it was a message that Jeremiah had given to the people many times and they didn't listen. But anyway, he is telling this to Jeremiah. Whether Jeremiah passed that along to others or not, we simply do not know. But at any rate, in this same verse 2 here in Daniel, the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. And then you will notice, with part of the vessels of the house of God, which he carried into the land of Shinar. If you'll remember, Hezekiah was one of the godly kings of Judah. But he made a great mistake one time because he was healed. God healed him. And these men from Babylon came down to encourage him, wish him well, what in the way political leaders do today. And Nebuchadnezzar made the mistake of showing them all of his riches and all of the riches in the house of God. And Isaiah asked him, he says, what have you shown them? And Hezekiah said, everything. And Isaiah let him know, you've made a big blunder. And he said, these people are going to come back and they're going to take all of this back to Babylon. But God will be merciful to you and you'll be gone before it happens. But this is exactly what did happen. They came back down, they besieged Jerusalem, and they took away all of those things that were in the house of God. Now, we will see these a reference to these a little bit later on in the fifth chapter of Daniel and verse 2. That's where we read that Belshazzar, that would be Nebuchadnezzar's grandson, he held a great party. You remember the time, and we'll see this later on in our lessons, you remember when there was the handwriting on the wall? Well, that's the occasion, is when Belshazzar had that great party and God wrote this message on the wall to him. It specifically tells us in that chapter, chapter 5, 2, that Belshazzar took many of the vessels that had come out of the temple at Jerusalem, and they used those to drink out of them and things like that. As we get over into that chapter, we'll find it was more of a religious gathering. It was really an idolatrous gathering, and they were using these same vessels in their idolatry unto the Lord. And so it was fitting that God should bring swift judgment upon them, which is exactly what he did. So they took these vessels of the house of God, and they carried them into the land of, what? Shinar. Have we seen Shinar before? Yes, we have. It's the location of the Tower of Babel, or Babel, whichever one you want to say. Anytime you see Babel, it is always associated with Babylon. Even clear on down to the end, Revelation 17, Babylon the Great, and it originated there in Shinar. And so notice that he carried this into the land of Shinar, and he did the same thing as he did. It's to the house of his God. These were just any other idolatrous items, and he added those with the ones that he already had. And he brought the vessels into the treasure house of his God. In verse 3, and the king spoke unto Ashpenaz, the master of his eunuchs, that he should bring the captain of the children of Israel, of the children of Israel, and of the king's seed, and of his princes. These would be though the elite of the royal line that came out of Judah. Now this is why that Daniel, we'll read of Daniel and the three Hebrew children here shortly, and they had to have been of that royal lineage. Daniel could very well have been in the line of Hezekiah or something of this nature. But you see, these were that royal seed that they had captured from the land of Judah. And so once again, Isaiah had prophesied that this would happen. You'll read that in Isaiah 39, verses 8 to 6, or 6 to 8, rather. And so these words were spoken to Hezekiah, so Daniel could have been a descendant of that very godly king. And if he was, he followed in exactly the same path of Hezekiah, because Daniel, as we're going to see, was an extremely godly man, even though he was in captivity. In verse 4, it describes the kind of people, the kind of individuals that the king was looking for. Verse 4, they must be children in whom was no blemish. They had to be well favored, skillful in all wisdom and cunning in knowledge, understanding science, and such as had in them to stand the ability in them to stand in the king's palace. You see, they had to be exercised in what you would call this royal protocol. They had to know how to behave themselves in the presence of royalty, and we know that even exists today in some of these monarchies, that they are schooled in how that they are to conduct themselves. And they wanted them so that they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. Well, instead of the Chaldeans making every provision to learn Hebrew or the language of the Jews, they insisted that these Jews learn the Chaldean term. When you go to another country, you learn their language, not vice versa. And so these are the type of young men that Nebuchadnezzar was looking for. Verse 5, and the king appointed them a daily provision of the king's meat and of the wine which he drank, so nourishing them 3 years, that at the end thereof they might stand before the king. So they were going to train them, they were going to feed them this same fare for 3 years, and after 3 years, then they were to stand and to be tested before the king after they had gone through their college, so to speak. Verse 6, now among these were the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Because these were of the royal line, again, they were undoubtedly carried away in this first deportation of Babylon. Again, you'll find that in 2 Kings 24, verses 10 to 16. In verse 7, unto whom the prince of the eunuchs gave names. So here is where that not only were they to learn the Chaldean language, but they were also to receive a Chaldean name. And so the eunuch gave them names. Unto Daniel, Daniel's name in the Hebrew name means God is judge. And each one of these names of these four Hebrew young men display something that God is, that God was still going to be. It displays the characteristics and the input that God had, even though they are in captivity. So Daniel is a very fitting name. God is still judge, despite the fact that they were in captivity. And so the name that he was given is Belteshazzar. Be sure and make a distinction between Belteshazzar and Belshazzar, because Belshazzar was the grandson of Nebuchadnezzar, and he was not a godly man by any stretch of the imagination. So this is Belteshazzar, and his name means Lord of the Straitened's Treasure. And that's exactly what he became. He lived up to that name because he became the Lord of Nebuchadnezzar's treasure. That's who the straitened would be here. And then Hananiah is the next one. His Hebrew name means the grace of Jehovah. And he still lived up to that because the grace of God was still with the Jews and with all of these four Hebrew children, as well as the rest of the Jews, during that 70-year captivity. God let them go into captivity, but he never did withdraw his grace from them. And his new name is Shadrach. And Shadrach means fine linen. And I thought this spoke so wonderfully of this man, as we're going to see even later. He did still display the fine linen of righteousness, that is, of God's righteousness, even in captivity. And then to Mishael, his name means who is what God is. And it means that God, even in this captivity, set himself apart as the God. Nobody can measure up to him. Who is what God is? And the answer is no one. And his name is Meshach. And I've wondered if perhaps he really did live up to this, because his name means waters of quiet. And I think he is, expresses that the way they quietly trusted the Lord and believed God, even a very difficult time, as we're going to see a little bit later on. And then there was Azariah. His name means helped of Jehovah. And again, he shows us this even during the captivity. And his name is Abednego. And that means servant of brightness. And still in captivity, they were believing God. And so all of these Hebrew names tell us once again of God's intention to care for the Jews, to protect them, to guide them, to preserve them through this 70-year captivity. And indeed, he did that for the entire nation. In verse 8, we read, "But Daniel purposed in his heart." And I want to notice such a personal lesson in our own experience, because if we ever achieve anything, or if we ever accomplish the purposes of God, it will be because we first purposed it in our own hearts. That's where it has to begin. It cannot begin with some resignation in our own minds or something, but it is purposed in his heart. That's where the commitment has to begin. He purposed in his heart he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested. We are going to get into a very sensitive subject that really does apply to our lives today. Because the king had given a direct decree, you will eat this meat and you will drink this wine. Daniel could not conscientiously agree with that. And so he was not going to do it. But this is where that we make this illustration. We can disobey authority without rebelling against it. And so Daniel didn't rise up and just grit his teeth and make a fist and say, we're not going to do that. You notice what he did first. He had this purpose in his heart. That means this was something that was really real and meaningful to him. He would not defile himself. He viewed this as defiling to his own self, his own body, his own heart. And so I want to notice that he requested. It's all in the attitude as to whether there is rebellion against authority or not. Now, I have told many this, classes down through the years. Rebellion is not permitted in God's school. We cannot be guilty of rebellion. I don't care what the reason is. We cannot be guilty of rebellion against authority. But we're going to see how that we do not have to always bow to authority, and yet we do not have to rebel against it. So the first thing is, he requested. And this is one of the first thing that we must remember. And it doesn't make any difference what the authority is. It could be a wife who is under the authority of her husband. It can be an employee who's under the authority of an employer. When we request, it means that rather than just rebelling and saying, I'm not going to do that, the first line of defense is to make an appeal, request. Make an appeal to authority. And that's exactly what Daniel did. So he requested of the prince of the eunuchs. He went directly to the immediate authority over him, and he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Verse 9, this is so tremendously important when we are making an appeal. If we have the right attitude, we can expect verse 9. Now the God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. God had already prepared the path for Daniel to go to this man. So it was not a confrontation. It was not going in a defiant manner. There was a relationship already established that Daniel used in order to make his appeal. Verse 10, and the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king. Notice that the authority over us has to deal with an authority over him. And therefore we have to take into consideration the things that the authority over us is dealing with. And so this man had to give an account to the one above him, that is the king, who has appointed your meat and your drink, said, it's him that's done it, not me. Why should he see your faces lacking worse than the children which are of your sort? Then shall you make me endanger my head to the king. It's my life we're talking about. If you show up looking worse than all the rest of them, I'm responsible. And so this is where that we come to the next part of this, which means that we be prepared with a creative alternative. And a creative alternative means we get the same result, we just go a different way. And so notice what Daniel said to him. He wanted to achieve the same results, and so notice what he said. Verse 11. Then said Daniel to Melzar, whom the princes of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah and the others, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. Let them give us pulse or vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our countenance be looked upon before thee and the children of the children that eat the portion of the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants. That sounds reasonable. You feed us vegetables and water for 10 days, and they can have the other stuff, and check us at the end of that time and see who looks best. And the man, verse 14, he consented. He agreed to that, to them in this matter, and he proved them 10 days. 10 in Scripture is the number of testing. And so here was his alternative. You just feed us for 10 days and see. And then after that, if it's not what you're looking for, well, we'll go back to plan A. Well, in verse 15, at the end of the 10 days, their countenance appeared fairer and fatter in the flesh than all the children which did eat the portion of the king's meat. Then Melzar took away the portion of their meat and the wine that they should drink and gave them pulse or vegetables. And so, You see, if there is the right attitude, and here is the wisdom of this creative alternative, if it works, look how God has answered, and there has been no confrontation, there has been no rebellion, the desired results have been achieved for everyone, and you didn't have to just boldly stand before the king and say, I'll not do that. And those same principles apply with any authority that we might go to. Verse 17, as for these four children, you can underline it, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. This is what happens when we really are in harmony with the will of God. It was not just Daniel refusing on religious ground, so to speak, to refuse to do what the king said. God was in this thing. He was conscientious before God, and God answered for them. And so this is the special place, of course, we learn here. We'll see this come to the fore here in just a little while. But this is the special place that Daniel had. This entire book is based upon the tremendous ability that Daniel had in dreams, visions. In verse 18, now at the end of the days that the king said he should bring them in, then the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. This would be after 3 years, according to verse 5. That was the time of the test, that they were to undergo all of this and then appear again before the king in 3 years. So we've reached that time. In verse 19, the king communed with them, and among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king, and in matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in all his realm. And so these young men outshined all of those satanic workers that the king normally and first used. And then we read these words in verse 21, and Daniel continued even under the first year of King Cyrus. Now we're jumping ahead of our story just a little bit, but this takes us into the Second World Empire. Just to name the kings, and Nebuchadnezzar, and then he gave away to his son, I forget for the moment what his name was, then his grandson was Belshazzar. After Belshazzar fell, then the Darius the Mede ruled, and then you come to Cyrus. And so Daniel was alive through all of those different kings. Now here's what I want to notice. Daniel came to Babylon the first year of King Nebuchadnezzar, so he was there from the very beginning. I don't know exactly how old Daniel was, but I'm thinking he had to be probably in his late teens or early 20s because of the type of men they were looking for here. That means Daniel had to have been somewhere around 90 years old when some of these things were written that we're going to find out about, because he dates them as to being in the first year of this king, the present day king, or so forth. So Daniel was an old man because he lasted the full 70 years, and then however old he was on top of that, he could have been as much as 90 plus years by the time all of these things, but well, I'd say by the time his ministry was over. All right, let's take about 5 minutes and we'll come back to Daniel 2.